Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. The S&P 500 continued its grind higher last week, though the markets could be in store for heightened volatility in the coming weeks. This due to uncertainty about economic data, Fed policy, earnings, of course, the U.S. election, and outside of the U.S., expected policy announcements from China. Joining us today to discuss this all, glad to welcome back Jason Dreho, the head of asset allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Jason, welcome back. Thank you for dropping by for the CIO Strategy Snapshot to begin another trading week.
Good morning, Dan. Happy Monday. It's good to be here for another week.
So, Jason, I mentioned a number of factors that could influence market movements in the coming days and weeks, though to begin, generally speaking, on market volatility, which does appear to be high despite risk assets continuing to grind higher.
You know, if you kind of pick up on that point, Dan, if we look at the S&P 500, it's, you know, at an all-time high, yet it's grinded higher over the past, you know, few weeks. Well, the VIX index, you know, the volatility for the S&P, but also kind of the Wall Street proxy for a fear gauge, has also gone higher, and it's currently over 20, which is an unusual combination to see, you know, the index level rise at the same time the volatility index also rises. So the question is, you know, why is that? When you actually look at the details of the option market or the volatility market, you know, and volatility kind of comes out of the option implied, you know, volatility, what it indicates is that the market expects and investors are pricing for higher volatility for the next month, more so than they are for the next 3 months. And then when you look at the event calendar, it sort of makes sense. We have an election coming up in just over 3 weeks and 22 days from today. The day after the election, there's the next Fed meeting where they could again cut rates or maybe not. They may take a pause. There's a lot of economic data that will come up between, you know, now and then. So a lot of different sources of uncertainty. If we focus just first on the election, you know, based on the latest polling, the outcome is still very much a toss-up. And I think because of that, investors have been reluctant to take a strong sort of directional view on one candidate or one scenario versus another, you know, whether that would be positive or negative for the markets overall, for certain subsets of markets. So as a result, one way that investors can position for it is to use options, either to get upside exposure for certain outcomes they think it could play out, or also to get downside protection, you know, in the event of other outcomes. One thing that does is when you buy options, you're basically buying volatility, and that sort of bids up the price of vol. Hence, one of the reasons why you've seen measures of volatility go higher. Now, and to be clear, what I'm talking about is implied measures of volatility, so it's sort of pricing and what could volatility be in going forward, you know, based on sort of expectations. You know, what we haven't seen really over the past month and past few weeks as equity markets, the S&P 500 has grinded higher, is realized volatility go higher. In fact, it's actually gone lower. So the ratio of sort of implied to realized, if we think about, you know, on a 1 month basis, is actually, you know, at very elevated levels over the past year. And I think, again, it speaks to markets grinding higher, but investors are worried about, you know, the outcome for the much more so for the next month. And this is not just an equity volatility story. If you look at implied volatility for interest rates, you know, the MOVE index is commonly looked at for volatility in the treasury market. It's also gone much higher. Just last Monday on October 7th, it reached its highest level since early January. So even though the Fed is now cutting rates in the past, seems to be, you know, for them to continue to cut rates, the news of the past week has certainly added some uncertainty about, you know, how fast they will cut, you know, the shape of the curve. And so the path and those outcomes are a little bit less clear today than they were maybe just 2 weeks ago. And that's adding again to the uncertainty when we look ahead as opposed to looking backwards. And that's what the market implied volatility is indicating.
So with that, Jason, let's focus in on recent economic data as well as the course for monetary policy from the Fed. How do you see those factors perhaps driving volatility? And what is your outlook based on the recent data?
Well, the key data point last week was the September CPI or inflation data. It was a little bit above expectations, not extreme so, but definitely it was on, you know, above, not below. But in contrast, the September PPI, the producer price index data, was a little bit below expectations. Using the details of both those reports, economists can kind of construct a more precise estimate of what they think the core PCE inflation gauge will be for September. This is the key measure that the Fed actually focuses on. And based on the data from last week, it's still on track to be about 2.6% for September. So not really an uptick, but also not necessarily a further, you know, decline. between the CPI data being a little on the hot side, coupled with the strong, September jobs report that also revised earlier numbers higher. What's renewed at least a little bit is that maybe the economy is, landing back to kind of this no landing scenario where the economy stays elevated with elevated growth and inflation, and even some fear that inflation could accelerate versus a more gentle kind of declining of both growth and inflation towards a soft landing. So that data combined sort of complicates the story from the market perspective and for the Fed as well, at least I'd say marginally. But it doesn't change just our view that the direction of travel is for the Fed to cut rates. And we still expect the Fed to cut 50 basis points this year with 225 basis points cuts, including the one on the November 5th meeting. But it is possible that the Fed could end up skipping one of these meetings. Current market pricing is about a 15% chance that the Fed does not cut rates in November. Key to that at this point in time will be the jobs data we get for October that comes out on the Friday before November 1st, which is during the blackout period and it's right before the election. So if that's a strong number, like again, that it beats expectations, market pricing or a skip will go up. It's a less chance of another 25 basis point cut. But without any real opportunity for the Fed to guide, they probably don't want anything before right before the election. It does, again, sort of introduce the possibility of more volatility just related to the Fed as well. And we get this week September retail sales data that comes out, I believe, on the 17th, on Thursday. If that's another strong report, that'll add kind of this to this no landing kind of narrative and that, add to the possibility that the Fed doesn't cut. And what we can end up having is, the market going into the meeting with basically a 50-50 probability of the Fed cutting or not. And again, that will introduce, more, market volatility. So from what is still a positive story on the economic front, just the uncertainty of what it means in terms of what the market was expecting for a clear path for the Fed to cutting rates. Now, if there's more uncertainty, that alone just introduces more possibility of market volatility.
Now, another consideration, of course, being the Q3 corporate reporting season, which did commence last week, currently in progress. What is CIO's outlook, and could corporate reporting also be a source of market volatility?
Well, our expectations are that earnings per share for the S&P 500 will grow 5-7% in the quarter on a kind of a year-over-year basis. If you exclude the energy sector, though, growth is more in the 8-10% range. So there's some one-off factors specific to the energy sector that it will weigh down on earnings. For comparison, the consensus forecast, bottoms up is for 4%. That's actually come down quite a bit over the past month. It's come down about 4%. So typically, during going into the start of earnings season, companies kind of give some guidance. Analysts kind of, lower their forecasts. The decline in those consensus forecasts has been a little bit more than normal. Usually it's around 3%, now it's about 4%. What it does mean is that the bar has been sort of lowered for companies to be able to beat. And so if that's the case, there's certainly more scope for some upside surprises, and therefore that could also, again, be in terms of surprises, that's a source of volatility. So far, 30 companies have reported earnings. Even though the earnings season really commenced on Friday, there's some early reporters. And earnings per share, results came in about 5% above consensus. Yes, 3% is sort of a typical beat. So already sort of on the positive side. On Friday, we did get some major banks reporting, including JP Morgan, and the results were good. We saw that, their stock price went up significantly. The financial sector was the best performing sector on Friday. So don't want to read too much into this very early sign, but it's sort of consistent with a bar being lower and then the scope for earnings to be a little bit more on the positive side. That's certainly playing out. Another thing to kind of watch for in the earnings season is, profit growth kind of broadening out. Certainly for much of the past year, a little bit more than a year, it's been the Magnificent Seven stocks that have been really driving earnings growth. They've been strongly positive. The rest of the market has been flat and even in some cases negative. Last quarter was the first one where we saw profit growth kind of, from these other 493 stocks in the S&P 500 be positive, and we continue to expect that to kind of broaden out. That said, still expect strong earnings growth from the Magnificent Seven, should surpass 20%. So overall, kind of a relatively constructive story. Another thing to kind of watch for is, as companies report, also kind of guidance for the fourth quarter. Right now, it looks like a kind of a high bar with consensus calling for 14% growth. But some of that is also just inflated by a bunch of one-time items that depressed results in the fourth quarter of last year. So if you kind of abstract from that or sort of factor that out, kind of real earnings growth expectations are more sort of achievable 8%. So the bottom line is it should be another solid quarter of earnings growth. The bar has been lower, so scope for some upside surprises which would be positive, but also, you know, again, adds to the kind of the volatility narrative that we've already discussed.
So if we look outside of the U.S., turning to China, there was a press conference by the Ministry of Finance on Saturday, which investors were hoping would provide more details on China's fiscal plans. Any notable takeaways from that press conference you can share with us?
Well, the overall kind of takeaway is that the central government continued to hint at the ability to provide additional measures, whether it's kind of raising support and funding for local governments on the bond market, more support for the property market and major banks. So directly consistent with what's been said over the past few weeks by Chinese policy officials. But they stopped short of unveiling any specific details of, like I say, a multi-trillion dollar yuan stimulus package or anything that would sort of boost kind of consumer spending. In fact, that might have been a little bit on the disappointing side. So I think the speech I viewed as light on details. It's more kind of consistent with the government saying they will provide more stimulus. The expectation now is that we won't actually get those details until later in the year, November, possibly December. So given what the market's already moved and what the market's already priced in, it's not surprising that to see Chinese equities were only up 1 to 3% today. I think there was hope for more. And when you put in context the details are kind of lacking, but the direction of travel still seems to be this has been a notable change in policy, and they will do what they can to maintain and achieve their growth targets at around 5%. So it's more about kind of truncating sort of the downside risks. It does not appear that they're willing to provide significant stimulus in the way they have in the past to provide sort of upside growth. So a positive result tempered by lack of details that should be forthcoming later in this quarter.
Given all of this, if we bring it back to positioning, speak a bit about the investment implications. What are your current asset allocation recommendations at this time?
We've talked as a common theme throughout this call about, the possibility of, heightened volatility, and we're seeing the market pricing for more volatility over the next month. But the fundamental story still remains, positive in terms of U.S. growth. I mean, part of the volatility is stemming from the fact that the U.S. economy seems to be doing better than expected, and maybe the Fed has to cut rates or will cut rates less than had been anticipated just a few weeks ago. That's not necessarily a bad outcome. It also means that as we get through some of these risk events, whether it is the election, just getting clarity on what is the outcome, getting clarity on the data, what the Fed will do at the next meeting, sort of guidance for what they might do at upcoming meetings, that will be an improvement. So just sometimes resolving uncertainty and the resolution and getting kind of more clarity on the direction of travel, that tends to be on net a positive for the markets because investors kind of more sense of where we're going. Ultimately, we think the fundamental story, the earnings story as I alluded to, is also positive. So continue to see more upside for U.S. equities overall. The tech sector last week was an outperformer. It led the markets. And we also expect, as I alluded to with the Mag 7 earnings, continued strong sort of earnings growth. So the AI theme continues to have runway, even though we've been talking about it for a while. We just think it continues to have good runway to next year, so it remains a most preferred sector. Within fixed income, the good news is the fundamentals are solid, but as an investor, that also means it makes it more challenging because spreads kind of across the board are quite tight, which is why we think kind of staying still up in quality is the better way to play it. You're not necessarily getting compensated if you go up the risk curve by taking sort of a more exposure into riskier corporate credit, for example. So staying up in quality, whether it's investment-grade corporate bonds, the mortgage-backed securities. In terms of interest rate exposure, we don't think it's, there's the risk-reward, say, for buying a 10-year treasury at this point in time is that attractive, in part because, rates could go higher if the economic data continues to come in strong and we don't get, the Fed cutting quite as much. There will be sort of better entry points, but not necessarily at these current levels. A little bit maybe more in the intermediate part of the curve, the 5 to 7 year offers perhaps a little bit better entry point if you're looking to add exposure relative to getting into cash, which we advise investors to kind of think about, position more for lower rates and getting out of that cash into other parts of the fixed income space. Other areas to look at, the things that we like include oil, partly as sort of a geopolitical risk hedge, gold also as a hedge for if the economy doesn't slow down and rates don't come down as much, inflation stays high. Gold can be sort of a bit of a hedge against some of those kind of fundamental drivers. So bottom line, near term could have more volatility in the marketplace. Typically that's associated with some challenging, at least choppy markets. But once those volatility and those key risk events pass, the fundamental story still looks relatively constructive for risk assets, certainly in the U.S. And now central banks around the world cutting rates also scope for sort of broadening out of performance around the world.
Well, Jason, thank you again for dropping by on this Monday morning to take inventory of the factors that could move markets in the coming days and weeks, and of course, keeping our listeners and clients current on the positioning views from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Nice speaking with you today, Jason, and do look forward to picking back up with our conversation in the week ahead.
You're welcome. Have a great week.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights, at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.